Editorial note. Once again, it seems prudent to insert a little material from other sources here, as the Valhallan's expedition against the Xenoist defectors was to have unexpected repercussions. Kane, as we might expect, has little to say on the matter himself, as his attention was elsewhere. The first is extracted from the after-action report of Major Rupert Brocklaw, made on 593.931.M41, shortly after the engagement was successfully concluded.
After the preliminary bombardment ceased, both infantry platoons disembarked from their chimeras, which had been dispersed around the perimeter of the rebel-occupied zone in accordance with the previously determined deployments. 3rd Platoon was supported by 1st Sentinel Squadron on the left flank, 5th Platoon by 2nd Squadron on the right, leaving 3rd Squadron with the company command element as a mobile reserve. Resistance was light, as anticipated, and 5th Platoon rolled up their flank with little difficulty apart from a couple of heavy exchanges of fire with dug-in survivors of the bombardment. Lieutenant Farrell called in Sentinel support for the two squads thus engaged, which committed our reserve squadron. The flamer-equipped sentinel in each group cleared out the entrenchments with little difficulty after the other two laid down suppressive fire from their multi-lasers to allow them to approach. On the left, things didn't run quite so smoothly, as 4th Squad of 3rd Platoon came under crossfire from two enemy positions, pinning them in place. The flamer sentinel sent to assist was struck and disabled by a crack missile, forcing its fellows into a defensive posture which severely attenuated the effectiveness of their suppressive fire. At this point, Lieutenant Sula broke the deadlock by leading a command squad in a flank attack against one of the enemy positions, while 2nd Squad under Sergeant Lustig hit the other. By luck or good judgment, both were able to carry the positions almost simultaneously, allowing the remaining sentinels to close and 4th Squad to advance.
I am still undecided as to whether Lieutenant Sula's action was bold or reckless, but it was undeniably effective. Extracted from Like a Phoenix from the Flames, the founding of the 597th, by General Janet Sula, retired, 097.M42.
Notwithstanding Commissar Kane's assurances that resistance would be light, as indeed was to prove the case, I felt more than a touch of apprehension as the barrage ceased, and Major Brocklaw gave the order to advance. Not at the prospect of combat itself. The pitiful handful of rebels we'd faced seeming little to fear after the Tyranid hordes we'd bested on Karania scant months before. But at the realization that my first real test as an officer was upon me, and the fact that one of the most renowned heroes in the segmentum had reposed his trust in me was an added burden which I felt ill-equipped to bear. All went well at first, however, with the squads in my platoon advancing swiftly to contact. My readers may well imagine the frustration I felt as I sat in my command chimera, listening to the vox chatter, reliant on the reports from my subordinates for a full tactical analysis, for until my unlooked-for promotion, I would have been among them, facing the Emperor's enemies head-on, as a soldier should. My impatience increased as it became clear that one of my squads, women I'd served alongside and men I was beginning to know and respect, was pinned down, taking casualties and unable to advance. As the sentinels, which should have relieved them, ran into trouble themselves, I could stand by no longer, regardless of my commissar's admonition to be cautious. Especially since, knowing his reputation, I was certain he would not have hesitated to put himself in danger for the good of his fellows, were he to find himself in a similar position. Calling on my troopers to follow me, and taking but a moment to switch the command channels to the combeed in my ear, I jumped from the rear ramp, eager to join the fray. The sight which met my eyes was to give me pause. The elegant buildings and thoroughfares through which we'd driven were no more, their places taken by heaps of rubble, through which barely recognizable pieces of their original form could still, in places, be discerned. A thick pall of dust and smoke hung over everything, reducing the bright afternoon sun to a sullen grey, and for a moment I couldn't still the flicker of regret which rose unbidden in my breast. Even tainted by the alien as it had been, the architecture had been undeniably elegant. I had little time for reflection, however, as the crack of lasfire reminded me forcefully of the dire peril my soldiers were in, and with a cry of, "For the Emperor!" I led my doughty quartet to the rescue. A quick study of the tactical slate in the Chimera had shown me that I had an unengaged squad, sufficiently close to the most distant of the enemy positions to flank it, with a high probability of success, and after a few terse instructions to the sergeant leading it, this indeed was to prove to be the case. That left the nearest to us. We took them completely by surprise, a couple of frag rounds from our grenade launcher bursting among them and causing great dismay, before charging home to dispatch the survivors with pistols and chainswords. Cowards all, as those who oppose the Emperor invariably are, they broke and ran, exposing themselves to the vengeful fire of the squad they'd been pinning down, who were only too keen to even the score. I'm proud to say that of the team under my direct command, only one man was wounded, taking a lasbolt to the leg as we charged, while none of the traitors escaped alive.
From which we may safely conclude that, whatever her martial abilities, Sula was no literary stylist.